Hi, my name is Jose. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jose.
My sobriety date is August 25th of 2008, and I've got a sponsor that I was just with this whole weekend at a men's weekend for AA, and I sponsor three, maybe four guys. It kind of depends on the one guy, and I've got a home group midtown up in D.C., which I would be at right now. I'm also really active up there. You know, I go to about five meetings a week, sometimes a little bit more, but I have three meetings that I go to. I've probably gone to every Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday night for the last 5 years since I moved up to D.C. And when I would go home from D.C., I would go to those meetings. I mean, and I sit in the same chair. I get there at the same time. And, you know, that is really important for me. You know, so if anyone is new here, you know, I guess when I came to AA, I was really looking for you know, some sort of like spiritual bomb that was going to kind of get me sober or get me to feel better, so I wouldn't feel bad anymore and I wouldn't feel like drinking. And you know, I've found that a little bit, but really, what's been most helpful for those of you who are new is really just being consistent. You know, and I'm at those meetings every week. People that go out and come back in tell me that they knew I was going to be sitting in the same chair. You know, and it really helps me because, you know, sometimes I still, it's not that I don't want to go to the meeting, but I've got a lot of other things going on in my life, you know, and if people know I'm going to be there, if I have service, I mean, I have to go there. And that's really helpful for me. You know, and the same thing is with my home group. My home group is really big. It's really helpful for me, though. You know, when I first moved up there, I started going and I felt, you know, I didn't know, you know, how am I going to get connected with all these people? You know, but anytime I've had something happen to me, I mean, I can find someone in the 400, 300 people that go to that meeting who've had my experience. I mean, and they've gone through it sober, you know, from everything, you know, from, you know, not getting what I wanted with the job, losing the girlfriend, family members dying, I mean, everything. And, you know, I've never had to do anything like that alone. You know, on the sobriety date, I mean, that's really important to me because, you know, that's when, you know, I woke up and started on this new path of life. And so I'm here to tell you what I was like, what happened that got me into AA, and what it's like now. You know, I really want to thank Billy for asking me. You know, this is the type of place where when I was new, like, I would see some of the people from this group, some people from the sponsorship family, you know, in Charlottesville, because that's where I got sober, and I would think, you know, one, those guys have got something going on. Sometimes I thought, you know, they're a little weird, but, you know, they got something going on. You know, but they always seemed like they just didn't care what other people thought about them, and they were all happy and had a fellowship. And I thought, you know, maybe one day I will get to speak at a meeting like that. You know, it means a lot to me. I also think about the last time I was here, which was probably 3 or 4 years ago with my sponsor, and we brought a guy that I was sponsoring, and, you know, and he didn't listen, and, you know, terrible things happened to him. I mean, I always think about those types of things when I go to places, when I go to the same place, you know, years and years ago. So I was born in Ecuador. My mom was down there on a Fulbright scholarship, and she met my dad, and he was this really awesome, charming, worldly guy until, you know, after he lured her in and got the hooks in her, you know, he was a raging alcoholic, and, you know, things got really bad. You know, she told me that he was abusive to her, but he was also abusive to me. And I think I was less than 2 years old. And, you know, and she would tell me things like this all the time when I was growing up. I mean, I'm not telling it to you because it makes me an alcoholic. I don't know if that has anything to do with me being an alcoholic. But, you know, from the beginning, I was told, never drink. You know, you should never drink. You're definitely going to be an alcoholic. You have family problems. This is what your dad did. This is how crazy he acted. These are all the terrible things that befell our family. You know, and I had that going in through my mind, you know, my entire childhood. You know, even when I would act out, my mom would say, you know, you're acting like your dad, you know, if I get a rage or something. You know, so I never, you know, and that really hurt because I never wanted to be like him and I hated him. And then, you know, I grew up, I mean, and my mom was lucky enough to meet my stepdad who, you know, was this really awesome, very spiritually connected guy. And I never wanted for anything. I never needed anything. I wanted stuff, you know, like, you know, new toys or money or things like that. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be good at sports. But I had everything that I needed. And I was raised in a faith. You know, we went to church every week. I went to Sunday school. Like, I was raised, you know, knowing what was right or wrong. And, And I kind of knew that drinking and doing drugs, I mean, that was bad. I knew that was bad, you know, the dare and all that. And I said I was never going to do it, and I kind of resisted a few times when people I didn't care about wanted me to go drink. And then someone that, you know, I wanted to be in with them said, you know, let's drink. And I just, my resolve crumbled like that. You know, and I don't, you know, the first time I drank, I think we had some 40s and some bushes up where I live. And that was kind of indicative of how my drinking was going to be. It wasn't really social. We drank until we got drunk, and then we stumbled home. You know, and I felt pretty guilty about that. I mean, I really, I knew that it wasn't right. But, I mean, I don't remember it that much. But what I do remember is when I got blacked out drunk for the first time. And that's when I really got the mojo, the spiritual experience. And I was at my friend's house in the backyard, and you know, we drank some vodka that I had stolen, and then we all had some 40s, you know, and then we had some special cigars after that. And, you know, and I don't remember anything. And what I was told is that I was in the middle of the tent throwing up into my lap, sitting Indian style. My one friend was throwing up out the other side of the tent. The other guy was throwing up out the other side. And, you know, those two were going to be my best friends until we got sober. When I woke up the next day, I mean, it really was, things were different. I mean, I saw the world through different lenses. I had that blackout, and I just thought it was so cool. I thought that's what happens in movies. You know, the guy wakes up, he doesn't know what happened, but when he figures out what happened, it was all awesome. You know, and I had run around town, hit my head on the ground. You know, we almost got busted, and, you know, nothing bad had happened. And I went back to school, and I tried to tell my friends about what had happened, and none of them could understand. You know, around the lunch table, you know, in the locker room. I mean, they really didn't get it. And I kind of made a decision at that point to kind of switch gears entirely to being someone who got loaded and drank, you know, as often as possible. And, you know, my friends were exactly the same way. I went to a private school up there, and I never hung out with any of the guys from my private school. I, you know, drove home from D.C., got in, you know, got on the metro or waited till my friends got home who were from the neighborhood, and we would meet in the middle in the woods, and we would get torn up. I mean, that was kind of what we did every day. You know, and I, like, I knew from the beginning that I had a peculiar relationship with alcohol. I mean, it was different than anyone else that I met because, you know, family members, friends, people in high school would say things like, oh, let's have a few drinks before the football game. You know, let's have a few drinks before the dance. And, like, I could not understand that. You know, they wanted to have sober fun. And, you know, for me, I would rather go to something like a football game or a dance or, you know, a movie stone cold sober because the idea of taking a couple shots and then going somewhere was excruciating for me. And I also had this vague idea in the back of my mind that if I started drinking, I couldn't stop. I mean, I never knew anything about AA. I didn't, you know, I was not aware of the phenomenon of craving. But I had this idea that, you know, once I get going, I'm going to put myself in a position to get into a lot of trouble. And so I resisted a lot of that. I mean, I didn't get into that much trouble in high school. I had, you know, one of my friends died from drug addiction, you know, and that, I mean, it really didn't affect me at all. I can remember after they died and we went to the funeral, all of us, I mean, we had been with them the day before. You know, we just got messed up. And it was, you know, this is what we do. You know, it's really bad that they did that, but I don't do crack or PCP, so that's not going to happen to me. I just drink until I black out, and that's, you know, it's legal. You know, it's alcohol. It's good. And, you know, and then I had a couple friends who went off to rehab and all that, you know, and that was like, you know, rude removals ripped from my life. But, again, it didn't matter to me. You know, and I treated a girlfriend really poorly. Again, didn't matter at all. I kind of kept it under wraps. I was able to do well in school. I don't really know how. I mean, to this day, I'm still really afraid of my mom. You know, she's, you know, we're best friends, but she's like 5 foot tall, and I really was afraid that if I didn't do well, she was going to kill me. I mean, that, it's, you know, even when I went to college, that was the fear of mom was always in my heart. And so, you know, I went to college down at UVA, and I was really, really pumped. All the other colleges I went to, I checked them out. I went and visited. UVA did not because I heard that they had a rugby team and that people drank a lot at UVA. I mean, that's all I really cared about. And I had pretty good grades. I could have basically gone to any school in the country, but UVA was close enough to my college, to my neighborhood friends, and I heard that they drank and, you know, they played rugby. And that's really all I wanted to do in college. And I got to college, and I was pretty disappointed because I was at the school with smart people who wanted to learn. And that really, I mean, I enjoyed learning, you know, and doing that, but I was really there for the partying aspect of it. And I can remember, you know, like it was yesterday, the first night when we got down there, our parents dropped us off, and my mom was crying. I said, you know, see you later, you know, and I had never called her when I was at school or anything. And we were sitting on the steps outside the dorm, and our resident advisor gave us this survey, you know, so you can list your personality types and, you know, so you can get to know the people you're going to live with for the next year. And I said, and he didn't have one for me because he didn't make enough copies. And I said, it's okay. I don't care about that. I don't need it, you know, and I was just looking for the party. And the first night I was there, I found people just like me, you know, who wanted to do the same things that I wanted to do. And that was not to be social. It was to get as messed up and loaded as fast as possible. You know, and I quickly realized, I mean, my drinking was different. I really thought that when I went to college that it was going to be like the movies where I was going to go out and drink as hard as possible, and that was whatever I could get my hands on, you know, really cheap beer, you know, beer that was warmed over. You know, if there was an old keg, we would put it, you know, in old beer bottles and refrigerate it to get it better again. I mean, it really, the whole idea of skunked beer, it meant nothing to me. And I was going to go out and get as drunk as possible, wake up in my dorm room, and there would be a beautiful woman next to me telling me how good I was the night before. I mean, I really thought that's how it was going to be, because that's what happens in the movies. Instead, I would wake up and my bed would be wet, you know, with urine or with me throwing up. You know, sometimes I peed all over the room. I mean, it happened, and in other people's rooms, and everybody was really mad at me. You know, people that cared about me were disappointed. They were mad. I had alienated them. I'd, you know, physically assaulted them. I threatened them with violence. I mean, that's what happened. And I really started to get these shots, like, right away. You know, and I went to the hospital, actually, this weekend, probably 9 years ago. Yeah, I think this weekend 9 years ago, I went to the hospital. I was doing the whole Red Bull and vodka thing. And like, my phenomenon of craving kicked in. I did not know about it. You know, that's how it worked. The guy that I was drinking shot for shot with, he was able to stop, and I wasn't. And I woke up in the hospital, and he was there at the foot of my bed, you know, taking care of me. Oh, man, something bad happened. You were turning blue. We called the police on you. And I really didn't get in any trouble for that. I had a huge bill to send to my parents, you know, because that's what all the tough guys do is, you know, get your parents to take care of you. And I just said, I'm never going to drink liquor again. And that lasted for, you know, until I got blacked out on beer the next time, and then I started drinking liquor again, and you know, I mean, things like that just started happening. I started getting run-ins with the police. I had another incident where I went to some random kid's room and, you know, peed all over his floor and assaulted him and almost got expelled from school, and I had to put on my suit and, you know, and say, you know, that was uncharacteristic of me. I'll never do that again, and they believe me, you know, and then I went home. You know, tore up my family. You know, I really was a terrible son. You know, I think I had a 9:30 or a 9 o'clock curfew when I was in college, when I lived with my parents. I mean, that's insane. You know, all my other friends could do whatever they wanted. And my parents, it was like cops and robbers, you know, smelling my breath coming in. I was sneaking in through screen doors, sneaking past my parents' room, and just keeping them up all night and, you know, really causing them a lot of harm. You know, and I was loaded when I was with them pretty much all the time. I was never there present for them. And I had a couple instances where I really didn't show up for my family when I had family members who were sick. I just didn't answer their calls. I chose not to be there. You know, and so I went back to college and I lived on my own in my own house. And it was my I have arrived moment. I can remember it like it was yesterday. There's actually a picture on Facebook, funnily enough, where I was having a party, you know, and I'm standing on the keg and everyone's looking at me and, you know, it was like, this is life. You know, I want this to be how it is. And, you know, and as quickly as I got up to that level, I really just started losing all that stuff and having really more severe consequences. I started to get really violent when I would drink. I mean, that's kind of my MO, my calling card, if you will. Some people isolate. I just get, you know, psychotically violent. And, you know, I tried to kill my roommates when I was drunk. I mean, really physically attacked them. And they called the police on me. And I woke up in the hospital with the like the fuzzy handcuffs chaining me to the bed, not the good ones, you know, with like the hearts on them or anything, but, you know, they were the restraints. I know that there are some medical professionals here, and they were like those restraint handcuffs where you can't move, and I had a diaper on and IVs and all that stuff, and, you know, I felt so low when I woke up from that, because that wasn't my plan. I mean, that started to happen to me with drinking was that I would have this idea of how it was going to be when I was drinking, and really all I wanted was to have fun. I mean, I had this, like, this idea out in the woods over there, you know, fun. And fun was, you know, getting drunk, getting violent, you know, with my friends in a, you know, a responsible way. You know, I played rugby, and, you know, we would fight each other when we were drunk, and doing stuff like that, and then everything was all right. And that's always what I shot for, but I would always overshoot the mark. And so, you know, things started happening like that, and, you know, and it got really bad. I had an instance again with the same one where I tried to hurt my roommates, where I broke a door with my head, and, you know, and I can remember it really clearly because I walked home from the UVA hospital barefoot in the scrubs because I'd ruined my clothes, and there was nobody to call. You know, there was no one at the foot of my bed taking care of me because, you know, they were gone. You know, I had already said I wasn't going to do that about five times before. And I got home, and I went to my room, and there's blood and chocolate milk all over the wall because, you know, that's how I go. And, you know, and I just went into my really crappy room because I lived in the crappiest room possible because it was the cheapest and I could have the most money to spend on alcohol. And, you know, and I passed out. And I don't know if anyone can relate to this. I mean, I would have these moments during that time where I would wake up, and for a brief moment, I would, you know, it's kind of the opposite of a drinking dream. It was like a sobriety dream where I would think that everything in my life was kind of cool, you know, like before I'd started drinking so much, and the girlfriend still wanted to be with me, the family wasn't alienated, I didn't have a $5,000 hospital bill, and then it would snap into reality, and I basically had to drink after that. And that just kind of continued on, you know, lots of escapades like that, and things happening, and then I went home for that summer, and I had a really, really crappy summer. I chased a lot of things the whole summer, and I don't think I drew a sober breath, like it talks about in Bill's story. I mean, I was pretty much always drunk or in the process of getting drunk. I mean, I always had this planning mindset, you know, and every day that I went without drinking, it was going to be bigger. The blowout was going to be bigger. You know, we were going to do more stuff, and things got really bad at my home, and, you know, it wasn't pleasant. So I got back to school for my junior year, and, you know, and I should have been really happy. You know, I was going back to college. I was going to see all my friends, and I can remember, you know, I hadn't drank for a week because, you know, the heat was kind of on, and I was at a rugby training camp, so, you know, you're not supposed to drink when you're doing two-a-days, and it's, you know, I'm good. I'm got it under control, and then it was time to have the big party before school started, and I was going around seeing my friends, and I felt like I should be happier to see these people, but all I thought about was drinking. You know, I was worried about how much alcohol I had on me. I had beer in my pocket the whole time. You know, where were we going? You know, what party were we going to? And the last thing I remember from that was drinking a plastic jug of whiskey on the dance floor of the rugby house, a cowboy pull, as they call it. And you know, then I woke up in jail. And that was kind of a rude development. And I really didn't remember how I got there at all. You know, I kind of remembered from other, you know, kind of like similar run-ins with the police. I had kind of these flashes of, you know, where I'm screaming and like yelling and trying to be a tough guy. And then, you know, they put my arms behind me and, you know, put my face on the ground. And then it's, you know, I'm not screaming anymore because they're kicking my butt, you know, and things like that. And really, really bad kind of like terror flashbacks. And I woke up in jail, and I kind of knew that something was really not right because that was never my plan. You know, and for, you know, anybody that's new in here, you know, I guess it's probably not your plan either tonight to be at an AA meeting at 6 o'clock on Sunday. I mean, I know for me, like if my life didn't depend on it, I probably wouldn't be here. You know, I'm a little bit away from home. You know, if there was a better way to do it, I wouldn't be here. And so I had this idea, like, something is really seriously wrong. And, you know, then things started to happen in my life that really, you know, really put me in a place, you know, to get recovery. And so I got back to my house, and, you know, things were not good at the house. I had, again, tried to kill my roommates, and they'd all locked themselves in their room. And then one guy was drunk and called the police, and then they actually arrested me this time. And we went to a barbecue that day, and I tried to drink, actually. I had a beer in my hand, and I just couldn't. I mean, I was too sick. And I have never been too sick to drink. And I think that was God, you know, starting to insert himself into my life. And I had some people come up to me and say things like, when is this going to end? You know, how is this going to end? And I mean, I was in college. I thought, you know, this is what everybody does. And I was getting people, my peers were telling me, this has to stop. And, you know, the policy of UVA is that if you get arrested, you have to tell your parents, or they'll tell your parents for you. And I was enough of a man at that point that I knew it was probably a lot better to tell my parents instead of them getting a call from someone. So I drove back down with a friend to Arlington, and I surprised my parents. I did not call them ahead of time. And I walk in the back door, and they're just hanging out, and they got all excited, you know, and they said, oh, my God, Jose, you're here. You know, what a nice surprise. And I was like, all right, sit down. And I told them what had happened. And they had known some snippets. I mean, I got drunk and ruined Christmas one year. Again, peeing in the hallway. You know, it was a bad Christmas morning. I was really hungover, and my mom was really angry. You know, and some other things. And I knew my friends had gotten a lot of trouble, but they didn't know how bad I was. And I told them what had happened. And, you know, they started crying, and they were very upset. And my mom said, we have to go to an AA meeting right now. And my mom had been in Al-Anon for a little bit when she came back from Ecuador. And, you know, she had done her own recovery from that with church and Al-Anon. And, you know, she knew what to do. And she took me to the meeting, like, right away. And she said she sat in the parking lot and prayed and cried for me. And I went to the meeting at this clubhouse in Falls Church up there. And I don't remember anything. I just remember I got a chip, and then I came back, and I kind of thought that because I was going to the meeting, my mom would be less pissed, and she was not less pissed. I mean, this was really, like, it was serious. And I also had this idea, you know, really like the jumping off point they talk about in the book, where I knew that I could not drink anymore. I mean, I knew that if I drank again, I was going to get in a lot more trouble. And this was my first time, you know, it's the first time it's not so bad unless you do something terrible. And, you know, I knew that something bad was going to happen, but I didn't really know what to do. And I think, again, God intervened in my life. I mean, I really didn't know anything about AA. I had told my parents that I had tried out AA before, but I had not. For the record, I did not. I went there in my mind, and I decided I wasn't an alcoholic, and then I didn't go again. And so I decided to go, and I went to the St. Paul's group in Charlottesville, and I don't know why. I reached out my hand, and I said I was new, and I was just open and willing to get help. You know, and for me, like, that is really, really important because, I mean, I work with a lot of new guys and see them, and, you know, when someone isn't ready to get help, I mean, it's really hard to help them. And, you know, and I was ready, and luckily, again, you know, God put somebody in my life who was, at that point, working the steps out of the big book. And he said, I'll be your sponsor, and we met up, and we just started going to meetings. I mean, I started doing the deal with him, and I'm not going to say I was perfect. I mean, I was a really selfish newcomer, and I was crazy. You know, we'd go out to Wings every Tuesday night down there, and I thought for the longest time that I was the cool newcomer. Like, that other guy, he was weird. He was on his phone the whole time. That other guy just got out of prison. He doesn't know how to interact with anyone, but I'm well-developed. So right off the bat, you know, I'm good. And I know I wasn't. I mean, I was loud and inappropriate and cussed really loud in public and, you know, did all sorts of crazy things because I was just kind of getting unfried. And I, you know, but I started doing the fellowship and, you know, going out with them after meetings before. But, you know, I started working with my sponsor every Friday. We'd meet down at a coffee shop down there, and we'd read the big book, you know, page by page together. And things started really happening. And it was so embarrassing for me. I mean, you know, in public with another man reading out of a book. And sometimes when we prayed, we would go and hold hands. And, you know, I remember one time we did it in a park right near there, and we kneeled, held hands, and said the third step prayer, and I was mortified. And, you know, some guy came over who was in the little clubhouse right there at the park, and I really thought he was going to say something like, you know, offensive or give us some crap for it. And he said, you know, I really like what you guys are doing. You don't see many people doing stuff like that. And that kind of, you know, that gave me another God shot because, you know, I felt like I was doing the right thing. You know, and I think it's funny, again, you know, for people that, you know, might be new about being embarrassed about being seen with AA stuff. I mean, when I was drinking, I did insane things and didn't think about it, you know, getting half naked and running around and screaming at people. And, you know, but now that I'm sober, I'm afraid that someone might know I'm in recovery and, you know, that I'm making my life better. And so I started working the steps with this guy, I mean, pretty solidly, I'd say. And, you know, I think we got to the eighth or ninth step, and I made amends with my parents, and that was really powerful. But really, it was just, You know, we sat around a table and I told him I was sorry and we all cried. You know, and it made some difference, but not really that much. And after that, he moved away. And I just kind of, I took the reins back and I did my own thing for a couple of years. And I really experienced what it's like to sponsor yourself in AA. And, you know, I'd say at first it wasn't bad because I was still kind of riding the wave, doing the fellowship. But when I would come home from college and be in my hometown, like, I didn't know anybody there. And I would go to meetings, and I just felt really alone. I would go to the meeting right before it started and leave right afterwards. And I just felt like, you know, there's got to be something more. And it got to a point, you know, where I'd be going to a meeting like this one, and I was kind of observing before the meeting, and I was seeing people talking, and, you know, there were a lot of people here early, and, you know, not all of you were talking explicitly about AA. You know, you were talking about your family and your friends and what's going on, and I would see people doing that, and I wanted that so badly. I mean, I wanted that fellowship. You know, I wanted people to call on me when it was time to call on someone to share. You know, but nobody knew who I was. And, you know, it was painful. I mean, and I definitely, you know, I was not the best person. You know, I did a lot of things in sobriety that I'm not proud of. And so I got to a point, this is kind of like my second what happened. I mean, I got to a point where I was about 2 years sober and I was about to, you know, claw my eyes out. And, you know, I had this idea, like, if this is what being sober is like, I should probably go back and drink. And I would see people at meetings in the D.C. area, kind of like, you know, this crew, the Common Solution crew, guys who you could tell that there was something different, you know, and they were in on, I don't know, I'm not going to say it was a joke, but they were in on something, like they had a purpose. You know, they were at the meeting, and they would say the same stuff every week. I mean, I can remember guys like, you know, like James and Merv would say the same thing every week. And I thought, at first I thought, you know, it's kind of stupid. Why are they saying the same thing? Like, I know what they said last week. But while everybody else was sharing in the meeting and saying, like, what happened with their cat and other stuff, these guys were talking about the message of hope and recovery. And there were guys like that in the D.C. area. And it was kind of attractive, but I didn't really know anything about it. And I asked this guy to be my sponsor. I asked this guy for help. I had a girlfriend at the time that I got when I was newly sober, which I'll talk about later. It was not a good idea. You know, I asked him for help about this woman, you know, what to do with her, because obviously, you know, I'm going to fix it or whatnot, which didn't turn out to be the case. And he invited me to coffee, and the first time I was supposed to meet him, I actually blew him off. I completely ignored him and chased the resentment. And it's really funny to me now because he's a little tightly wound, and I imagine he was probably really pissed when I blew him off and wasted his time. But he didn't tell me to go pound sand, and we met up the next day at Starbucks. And I walked into Starbucks, and he shook my hand and said, you know, if you want me to be your sponsor, these are the things that I want you to do. And it was kind of like, whoa, things got very serious very fast. And he said, I want you to call me every day. I want you to go to 5 meetings a week. I want you to get 3 service positions, and I want to go through the steps with you. I mean, at that moment, I really faced another crossroads because I knew that if I didn't ask this guy for help, accept his help, I was going to go to the 7-Eleven next door and get drunk. I mean, I had ignored help from everybody else in AA. You know, if I can't accept this guy's help, you know, someone was clearly putting in my life, and I just said yes. I said okay, which I've definitely found is, you know, the most spiritual thing you can say in AA is okay, you know, or yes. And so I did, you know, it was really a struggle at first. I mean, I kind of fought it tooth and nail, and it was really hard for me to get plugged into AA. And I think that's where a lot of newcomers falter off, because it is kind of awkward when you first come in, you know, going to the meeting early, talking to people you don't know, calling people you don't know. Your conversation may last 30 seconds, you know, at most. But he wanted me to do it, and I did it. I mean, I really don't even know why I did it, but I kind of knew that this would make my life better. You know, I just want to say, for the longest time when I would talk about my sponsor, I would make fun of him. You know, I love him a lot, but I would kind of mock him and say something, you know, because he's kind of tightly wound you know, it's easy to mess with him. You know, but really, like, I feel kind of ashamed about what I said because, you know, that guy saved my life. I mean, really, without him, I would have been completely toast. you know, I've had times in my life when, you know, he was one of the only things that was keeping me from a drink. And without his guidance, I know that I would have drank. And, you know, and now I love him with all my heart. I mean, he's, you know, my brother in sobriety. And so he got me plugged in and really kind of guided me along that same path. I mean, and he got me hooked in with my home group up in D.C. area. And I would go up there every month for at least one meeting and just try to hang out with people. And he would say things like, you know, why don't you drive with me to the meeting? You know, and I'd say, I have my own car. I can go to the meeting. Or why don't we get there an hour, 2 hours early so we can eat dinner so that we can be an hour early. And I did not understand why we did that. But it really paid off, you know. And then when I went back down to school, he said the same thing. You know, I want you to be at the meeting half an hour early and stay late. And things just started really happening for me. I mean, I really started to get plugged into AA, you know, and because of that, other things in my life got really good. I mean, I had done all right in school up to that point, but, you know, I kind of really started to slide down my last year, and I started to pick it up and, you know, and just started to apply the principles of AA at school, you know, where I would show up early, stay late, ask for help, try to help other people. And because of that, I got into a grad school program and was able to do that and to do pretty well and to move back up to D.C. You know, and I'm trying to think what else. I mean, I've got a few other things I want to share about. You know, I think one thing, you know, with the relationship that I had that I got newly in sobriety, man, I really thought that there was nothing wrong with it. And the more that I've stayed sober, the more I've realized, like, we change so much as people. And so the person that I was when I met this person when I was, like, 3 months sober, like, I became a completely different person. You know, and that, you know, that was interesting. And I ended up making this person my higher power, which did not work out well when my higher power decided to leave me. And, you know, this was probably about 2.5, maybe 3 years ago, I think. And, you know, up to that point, I mean, I really had, like, I had everything kind of balanced, you know, but I had it all separate into different pots. You know, I had my AA life, I had my family life, and I had my girlfriend life, you know, and the things really didn't mingle that much. And as long as I could kind of, you know, give enough to them this week, oh, next week I got to give some more over here. And then my world kind of came crumbling down. And, you know, and it was funny, I went on a AA retreat in August, and then I came home and I was really high spiritually, and then she broke up with me after my home group meeting, and I called my sponsor afterwards, you know, sobbing, and he laughed, you know, picked up the phone and said, "This is gonna suck, but we're gonna get through it," you know, and I'm definitely living proof, you know, of the part in the book where it talks about how you know, work with newcomers helps when nothing else does. I mean, because I was totally insane after that happened. You know, I definitely thought about, you know, maybe driving my car into this guardrail, you know, maybe doing other things that would hurt myself. And at that point, like, the only thing that would help was things like going up to a newcomer and saying, "I'll give you a ride," and not asking them where they lived. I mean, you know, I took some guys out pretty far from the D.C. area, but it's what I needed, you know, or really putting pretty insane people in my car, you know, people where you're driving and you're looking at them and you're driving and you're wondering, is this guy gonna, you know, like, push me while I'm driving or attack, you know, wondering about that, you know, but I had to be with them. I had to go to the meeting. And at that point, I really started also getting involved in doing things like conferences and retreats. And those things for me, I mean, have really, really helped out a lot. I was just at a retreat, I guess we call it the Advance. And it's a thing where, you know, this year it was 280 guys got together. And, you know, we're from all over the country. Guys from Miami, Tampa, Philadelphia, New York, Minnesota, you know, everywhere, all the whole D.C. area. And we all came together, you know, to talk about AA and to hear it from this one guy. And, like, when I first went to that thing, I was so resentful. I mean, I really did not understand the point of it. It was kind of like the whole idea of getting to the meeting early, but on steroids. I mean, it was really like I'm surrounded in, you know, in Front Royal in the mountains by 200 other guys, and I can't leave. I mean, and all we're going to do is talk about AA. And that was a little scary for me. You know, and then it slowly started to really, I started to kind of get a better idea of what this is all about. And that has really paid off dividends for me. And so, you know, the other thing I want to talk about is kind of like, you know, what it's like now. You know, because I think that a lot of that was what had happened. You know, I got sober, and I really kind of got like the initial heat off, and I got into AA, but I really didn't know what AA was all about. I mean, I thought that I had this idea that, you know, whether or not I was conscious of it, that I was going to do AA, and that at a certain point I was kind of going to be healed. And, you know, and I've seen that. I mean, that's not how it works. I mean, and I think a lot of people get that idea, and I had that idea too. And then I had to hit a place, you know, in my life where I realized I had to kind of make it all, you know, everything has to be a part of it. You know, I don't have like an AA family. I don't have, you know, the family with the girlfriend that I have now. My family, you know, I have everything together. You know, we go, you know, invite people to dinner with my girlfriend and I have my family, you know, friends over at my family's house and things like that. You know, and what happened was I started really getting into service. And for me, the thing that has changed the most in my life, you know, has really been doing kind of 12-step work at hospitals and institutions. You know, and I had a friend who was in the D.C. area because he was taking care of his mom when she had cancer. And, you know, he had less time than me, you know, so I didn't listen to everything he said. You know, I'm joking. But, you know, he made some comment one time when we were hanging out about how, you know, he didn't come to AA to make friends. And I thought, all right, I'm going to listen to him. And he said, you know, the best friends that I've ever had have been friends that I got through doing service. You know, and he said, we need to go out to this treatment center. We need to go out there and bring a meeting. And, you know, I thought I would do it. And, you know, where I live in D.C., you know, in Arlington, is about an hour from this treatment center. So we get in the car and we drive. And it's pretty good. I mean, we've got, like, a meeting before the meeting with the guys, you know, out in there, and we go to the treatment center. I mean, and going to a treatment center, for those of you who have done it, I mean, it just kind of changes everything. Because when I'm in my own head or if I'm at the meetings, you know, by my house, I mean, people are sharing about problems that, I mean, they're not really problems if you think about it. I mean, it's like I didn't get what I wanted, but I still got everything I need, you know. And I forget that, you know, if I drink again, I'm going to die. You know, if I stop talking to my sponsor and being honest, I'm going to drink and lose everything. I mean, there was a friend of mine who was at my Tuesday night meeting who, he did that. I mean, he had been sober for 14 years and went out and lost everything, and I saw him at the treatment center. And you know, when I go to that treatment center, I mean, and it, you know, I am affirmed that God is alive and well, you know, and that AA still works. I mean, because, you know, meeting with them, I just leave and I feel so free, you know, so, you know, just so like I am in the right place. And, you know, because sometimes life, you know, I get beset by, you know, I get, you know, caught up in all the worldly things and I want to get mine and, you know, I got to get, you know, this new job or this girlfriend or these things. And then I realize, you know, that without being sober, I mean, I don't have any of it. And that's been a total game changer for me, doing the hospital service. And, you know, we go out there most every other Thursday, you know, and it is kind of a pain in the butt sometimes, but I always get what I needed to get. And I don't know what I needed to get until I get there. You know, and that fellowship that I really wanted and craved, I mean, I, you know, I have it now. I mean, when I, you know, one of the things I really wanted to do, you know, after I got some sobriety time was to pay off what people had done for me, you know, because people really invited me into their lives and took me out and, you know, to dinner and things like that and made me feel welcome. And so now what I'm able to do is have people over to my house and we'll meet up at 6:30, you know, and we'll cook dinner. I'll cook them dinner. And then we go out to this treatment center meeting and you see the light turn on and other things like that. You know, and kind of to tie things up, you know, the people that I hurt the most when I was drinking was my family. You know, by a long shot, it was my family. I mean, my mom, you know, she told me that when I was drinking, she could never sleep because she was always waiting for that phone call. You know, and if the phone rang, you know, she thought that it was the police saying that I was dead or in jail. You know, and I put her through hell. I mean, I can remember the look on her face when I told her that I had decided I wasn't an alcoholic anymore and I was going to start drinking. And this was, you know, before I got sober, and her face just crumbled because she knew I was going to, you know, drink myself to death and die, you know. And I lied to them, and I did all sorts of terrible things to them. My sister was somebody else that I really hurt. You know, she's 7 years younger than me, and And I wasn't the big brother that I should have been to her. And I was drunk all the time when I was with her. I drove her around drunk. I was just kind of, I was a jerk. I mean, and I would kind of fly off the handle and, do something like punch a wall or kick a hole in the wall. And she heard my parents fighting about me or worrying about me. But because of the program and going through the steps with my sponsor, I've been able to make amends to my family. And when I got with my new sponsor, probably about 5 years ago, we started going through the steps again. And I'd say the first three steps were not that tough. I mean, I guess I hadn't been living in a way that demonstrated that I thought I was hopeless, but he kind of squared that away for me. And then we did four and five and went through the defects, and that, again, wasn't, I was kind of ready to get that done with. But eight and nine with him, I had some issues with it when I started going through it with him. Because I'm the type of guy that, especially with my parents and other people I've hurt, like, I just want to go and make that amends and then be, I'm done. And we got into it in his apartment, because we went over my parents and he said, okay, so have you done your parents yet? And I said, yeah, I'm done. And he said, no, you're not done. I said, yeah, I'm done. And he said, no, you're not done. I got pretty heated because I thought that by going to them and saying that I was sorry, and I was crying and having a love fest, that meant I could do whatever the hell I wanted afterwards. And he explained to me that, you've really got to, you got to make the living amends. And, for me, that has meant a whole lot of different things. I mean, showing up for my family, doing things without them knowing, going and cutting the grass, taking care of them when they're sick, just showing up. I mean, being that guy that they always wanted to be. I was in California earlier this year on another AA retreat. That's kind of a common theme in my story. And, my sister had wanted to go to study abroad, and then it didn't work out, and she was all upset. And my mom called me and told me, you need to, she said, could you talk to your sister about this? And I was blown away because, even though I'd been sober for a while, I mean, it was never like that. I mean, I was the guy they were going to for help with things like that. And I was actually, I was able to talk to my sister and kind of talk her down and to get her to change her plans and, to be that role model, to be that person that she looked up to, from my mom, from my family, and to kind of patch that. And I think, if I keep doing that, I will be able to kind of repay what I did. But, I can't give them all of the sleepless nights back, but I can start. Another thing with my family, too, through my parents' church and through my church, there's kind of a retreat type thing that they go and do, and my mom did it, and she was a leader of one of the weekends, and I went and drove out to Front Royal. Again, it was in Front Royal. It wasn't an AA retreat, and I went and I got to meet all the women that she had been helping for the whole weekend, and they all had heard about me, and they all said, your mom loves you so much. She talked about how much you've changed through AA. Again, I was blown away, because that's not how it used to be. And I had a family friend who went there, and we were talking, and she said, I knew you would be here because you always show up to these things. You're always where you need to be. And I learned that in AA. I mean, when I got to AA, I didn't understand the whole principle behind showing up, where you say you're going to show up and doing what you say you're going to do. And now I know it's definitely one of the most important things I can do. And then with my sister, I was just, like I said, I mean, I was really irresponsible, and I wasn't a good brother to her. And this past summer, I got to take her out to the Grand Canyon. We actually went to Las Vegas. We didn't, I don't like the whole gambling thing. It kind of freaks me out. I think it's, I might untap that demon, so I just stay away from it. But we flew into Vegas, and then we rented a car, and we basically drove around the whole Grand Canyon, and we saw, we drove like 1,200 miles and saw all these national parks and camped every night and had an awesome time. And I was there. I made all the plans. I got all the cars. I did everything, and I took care of her. I mean, I was protecting her, and I did what a big brother is supposed to do. And she doesn't have to worry, that if I go out and I say I'm going to go to the AA meeting, because I went to an AA meeting when I was there, that I'm going to not show up, 4 days later. And I got to kind of to make that right, and now we're really close friends. I mean, things are pretty good. I mean, I've got a job back in D.C. that I mean, sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. I think that's how it is with every job. But again, you know, if I apply the principles to AA, I mean, I like it more. The last couple of weeks, I've noticed that I've got a really particular brand of being ungrateful. You know, I'm really ungrateful. And, you know, one of the guys that I sponsor said something about how, you know, his mom used to tell him, if you don't want to go to work, you know, put on a tie when you go to work. So I put on a tie, you know, and what do you know, I feel better about it. You know, I'm more grateful, you know, and it helps me to act better. And, you know, when I've got that attitude of gratitude and the mindset, I mean, I'm happy to be at work. I'm happy I have a job where I can go to meetings and do everything I want to do. You know, but when I'm not, I mean, all I focus on is how I deserve more. I should be somewhere else. I should be making more money. I should have more power and all that other stuff. And, you know, and I'm never happy. I mean, I'm never going to be happy. And my sponsor talks about, you know, when he talks about how he's got this idea that when he gets that, he's going to be happy. You know, when he gets her, he's going to be happy. When he gets it, you know, that job. And he's had that experience as I have. You know, I get that stuff, and I don't want it. I want the other thing, and because I think that's going to make me happy. And really, I think the thing that has, you know, really has made me happy the most is, you know, working with other alcoholics. You know, the past couple of years, I've definitely started to, you know, I think I've made myself more available to help other people. You know, and I'm still going to the same amount of meetings, but I think, to be honest, I'm less of an asshole. I mean, I've got this, I had this mindset for a while, like, you know, if you're not doing it the right way, I'm going to tell you how you're not doing it the right way, and, you know, you're going to want to hear about that. You know, so people that are at the meeting and they might share something crazy, I'd go up and tell them how they weren't saying the right thing afterwards, and, you know, what do you know? Like, nobody wanted me to sponsor them, and, you know, the guys that I was sponsoring, we just kind of got, you know, things got pretty heated between us, and, you know, one of them is my friend still, and one is not. So, you know, but I got this, I tried to develop this attitude, you know, that I want to be the guy that person, when he goes back out because he's not doing something right. I mean, some of us, we do know that person, you know, there's a good chance they might drink. But I want to be the guy that person calls, you know, not the guy that person doesn't want to call because he thinks I'm going to judge them or, you know, tell them, you know, you're so wrong, you're a piece of crap. You know, I want to be the guy that they call and they say, you know, I knew you would be willing to help me, or, you know, what you said was right, but I want to try something different. And that has really worked you know, lately. And, you know, with the sponsoring all the guys, I mean, I had an experience where this one guy asked me to sponsor him, and I was, you know, I thought, oh, man, 4 sponsees, that's kind of a lot. I don't know if I have time. And I, you know, I almost told him I didn't have enough time, but I thought, better talk to Matt first. Matt's my sponsor. And so I talked to him, and he told me that, you know, things just work out, you know, and that he keeps saying yes, and God takes care of the rest. You know, and that's what I've done. And it's really has worked out. You know, I was able to bring one guy on the men's advance this weekend, and we did a fifth step, and it was awesome, you know. And he was kind of nervous about going, and I could see the lights coming on in his eyes. I mean, really kind of starting to feel a part of, and not being so heavy, you know, that newcomer feeling, you know, when he's like, he's just thinking about everything bad that he ever did, and, you know, feeling like he's not worthy to be here. And we did the fifth step, and then, you know, he was kind of light and happy afterwards. And seeing that look in his eyes, and when that light comes on, I mean, I know why I'm here. You know, I'm uniquely well suited to help the alcoholic like this. And you know, when I came down from Front Royal, I stopped at my old family, my old parish priest's house, and I was talking to him. And you know, my higher power and, you know, things like that with God have kind of changed, you know, since I was a little kid to now, obviously. But you know, I was wondering, you know, how can I still have the same faith, you know, when most of what I do is, you know, helping other alcoholics in AA. And I was kind of expecting him to give me a little bit of grief, you know, and be like, oh, you got to do this or you got to do that. And he said, you know, it sounds like your ministry is helping other alcoholics in recovery. And man, that was a relief, you know, because, you know, he said, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, and basically when I think about it, you know, like your reading talks about, you know, what we do in AA is we help, you know, put the newcomer's hand into the hand of God. And, you know, it doesn't matter what God it is. You know, it's their God. I've got my God. And, you know, but I'm here so that I can help them do that. And, you know, the more that I do that, the happier I am. So that's all I got. And thanks for letting me share.